Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. I'm the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 23rd of September. All things political coming up this hour, 3 days after a raid by Somalia's al-Shabaab killed at least 62 people. It remains at this moment unclear how many gunmen and hostages are still cornered in that shopping center. The Interior Minister of Kenya expressed concern that this is a multinational collection of gunmen, and Western powers have been alarmed by a spread of al-Qaeda-linked violence across Africa. We'll talk about that during this hour. The House voted to have deep cuts to food stamps. The proposals to scale back the federal food stamps program made it through the House on Friday. Karl Rove has warned his party to not tie defunding of Obamacare to battles over the federal budget and raising the nation's debt ceiling. The president spoke at yet another memorial service, this one at the Marine Barracks in Washington yesterday, talking about last Monday's shootings. We will be welcoming your phone calls all hour for David Mark. David is editor of Politics, which is a very interesting site. It's a political journalism opinion site. He's the author of Going Dirty, The Art of Negative Campaigning. He was a senior editor at Politico, editor-in-chief of Campaigns and Elections, which covers the business and trends of politics, and also wrote for Congressional Quarterly and the Associated Press. We'll be welcoming calls at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email, as always, is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. David, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Well, you never know where news is going to start, and it certainly is a huge story that's coming out of Kenya. I'm sure that this will unfold as the days go along here, because there is legitimate concern about a spread of terrorism in Africa, and that makes people jittery all over the world. What's the latest you have on this story, David?
It looks like the hostage crisis is coming to an end. It's not clear if the hostage takers are still in captivity, if they've been taken yet, or whether they're still on the loose. Tragically, though, at least 62 people have lost their lives in what's got to be one of the worst terrorist attacks, at least since the bombing of the U.S. embassies in 1998.
Mm-hmm. And people in Kenya are saying that this is a multinational collection of gunmen. There may even be some from the United States.
Right. The details are still emerging, but it does appear there's at least a British woman who was one of the ringleaders, and certainly from Somalia, from the Horn of Africa. And this is actually what intelligence services have been warning about, that Somalia is a hotbed for al-Qaeda activity or related terrorist activities, that after the war in Afghanistan really drove al-Qaeda out of that region, that they've gone to Yemen, Somalia, other parts of North Africa, and sadly, those prophecies seem to be coming true.
Mm-hmm. I believe that you have written about this. The rebels are saying the attack was a retribution for Kenyan forces pushing into Somalia a couple years ago.
That's right, and that may be their stated reason, but it goes deeper than that. It's a sort of Islamist manifest destiny that some of these groups have. And what they're really saying there is Kenyan forces, which are largely Christian or secular even, leading into Islamic territory. And this really gets us right back to the time after 9/11, where it's very difficult to do battle with people for whom religion is their motivation in fighting, and they're willing to die for their cause.
Do you have a handle on, or do you think that we have a handle on, whether or not al-Qaeda has been growing in numbers the last few years? We haven't heard really all that much about that organization.
It doesn't seem to have been growing in raw numbers, but it's metastasized. It's broken out into numerous parts, and that's perhaps the most scary thing, where it's not army, and that's when U.S. and Western forces have always been at their weakest, when they're not fighting land wars, but trying to go after these diffuse, kind of broken up terror cells that are very difficult to track. And particularly in a country like Somalia, calling it a country is actually being kind of generous, because it's just a bunch of warring tribes. They're in a very strategic location on the Horn of Africa.
Mm-hmm. What happens at embassies all over the world and in sessions that are going on with world leaders, maybe even telephone conversations that are happening from one country to another after an event like this happens. Certainly people must be worried about the existence of Al-Qaeda in other places and possible action, or is this just really a Kenya-Somalia situation?
In a way, it's the worst kind of terror threat as America has experienced because it came in a shopping mall. It's not where you would expect it. In embassies, of course, you have strong security. I've been in a bunch doing speeches overseas, and I've seen they're literally like fortresses. And even in countries that you wouldn't think of there being home to hostilities, in fact, sometimes they're tougher there because they're deemed to be so open and easy to access, or at least they had been in the past. So that's the worst part of this all. In addition, after the human tragedy, is it really takes away that sense of security about everyday activities.
Right. They're such horrendous events, aren't they? Just awful. They're sickening.
Well, it's terrible. It's just like it's a smaller scale of 9/11 or the Boston bombings or the London underground bombings are in Spain. It's going after innocent people for political and religious purposes.
Yeah. And we want to tell our audience we'll be talking about this for a full hour, the first hour of tomorrow's program. But if you would like to comment today on this during All Things Political, please feel free to do so. Our phone number all hour, we're going to cover a number of topics, but our number is 800-486-8655. Another horror was last Monday when the shootings took place at the Naval Yard in Washington, D.C. The president speaking at yet another ceremony yesterday, saying that these massacres ought to lead to some sort of transformation like those that have taken place in other nations. And he warned that Americans must fight a creeping resignation about mass shootings. Do you think that's what's happened, a creeping resignation?
In a way, yes, I think the president is on to something. And you could kind of hear it in his voice, almost a tone of resignation that, yes, we, of course, should do something about gun control, but it's not going to happen. And, of course, recent legislative and political events reflect that. In April, the Senate defeated a background check proposal, relatively weak one. And then just a couple weeks ago, Colorado state senators, two of them, were recalled explicitly over their control of gun control issues. And it's just something that is probably not going to be enacted anytime soon. And I think the president makes a good point that whatever one's view on gun control, we really shouldn't accept this as the status quo, and we should continue to be shocked when it happens. Hopefully, we can all pray it doesn't happen again, but tragically, numbers suggest it will.
What do you know, David, about what's happening on a state-by-state basis concerning future recall attempts or recall attempts that may be underway right now?
I think those Colorado recalls were specific to those circumstances. That was Colorado is an interesting case because it's a state that actually had been fairly Republican and conservative even just up until a few years ago. Then it really started to turn, I'd say about a decade or so ago, and President Obama won it twice in 2008 and 2012. Democrats picked up control of the state legislature there. They won leadership on several state occasions, and I think maybe they got a bit overconfident. They thought that the state, frankly, had gone bluer than it actually had. So I think it's a bit of a cautionary tale to other swing state areas that public sentiment is moving in the direction, perhaps, of those who support gun control, but it is not there yet. And gun control is an issue. It's actually one of the less partisan issues, in that you have, frankly, a lot of Democrats who are hunters and shooters and don't want to have their recreations messed with by government officials.
Mm-hmm. And yet it was said over and over again that the great majority of Americans do support universal background checks.
Right. It's just the problem for those who support such measures is the opposition is usually are almost always more vocal and well-funded, and that's just what happened again in these Colorado recalls. The people who get out and feel passionately about these issues on the anti-gun control side. And until the other side can muscle up and get some kind of counterbalance to that, they're going to continue to lose the argument.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting fairly close to a possible government shutdown now. Even Karl Rove, which is interesting, warned against the party's plan to tie defunding of Obamacare to battles over the federal budget and to raising the nation's debt ceiling. Do you think that we will see a government shutdown in a couple weeks?
I actually think it's going to be avoided. Strange as it sounds, I've seen so many of these battles on Capitol Hill where they yell and scream, and at the end, literally in the final hours, they come to some kind of deal with each other. I think Republicans have, in a way, given themselves an out. It gets a little complicated. It's like legislative ping pong, but the House Republicans have sent a bill over to the Senate to fully fund the government through mid-December, as long as Obamacare is defunded. Presumably, Democrats are just going to strip out that provision and send it right back to the House, although they could change funding levels and do some other things with it. But bottom line, those Senate Democrats are going to send this back to House Republicans right on deadline, probably within 24, 48 hours of the government closing down, at least on paper. And they're going to put Republicans in a box and force them to have to make some tough decisions.
And the Republicans will do that? They will drop their attempts to defund Obamacare?
Don't know that they'll drop it. Maybe they'll try and put it off, wait it for another bill. But I do think that in the end there will be some kind of resolution. It probably will involve Republicans caving somewhat, because they don't want to be on the wrong end of blame for the government shutdown. And once that happens, you never know what's going to happen. Who's going to get blamed? It also has to do with what agencies actually close down. Actually, federal agencies have a lot of discretion about who's deemed a quote-unquote worker. Government officials can move around money from account to account. So it's not clear quite what the ramifications would be of a government shutdown from October 1st on.
Is it clear, David, who would be blamed?
No, it's not clear at all. But the Democrats, President Obama, the Obama administration, and Senate Democrats feel pretty confident that Republicans would be blamed, and they're clearly willing to take that risk and let Republicans, in their view at least, close down the government. So I think Democrats, they must have some polling that suggests that they would be deemed on the right side of this issue.
Well, and they do have a point. The Democrats aren't about to allow this signature piece of legislation during a time when it's been hard to get both sides to agree to anything. Not that Republicans agreed to Obamacare, but they're not likely to say, oh, okay, we see your point. We're going to defund Obamacare.
No, it's crazy. It's lunacy to think that Democrats are going to want this in any way. If anything, it's probably hardened their opinion more toward the other direction. It has been a strange strategy on the part of Republicans in that, you know, usually people who are well-versed in politics and these kind of brinksmanship games know that you never make a threat that you're not prepared to carry out. You never make a promise you can't deliver. And it seems like Republicans are promising to voters that they're going to defund Obamacare when they really don't have the legislative tools at their disposal to do so.
We were talking about this on some shows last week, and the point was made that certain Republican organizations, very, very conservative organizations, are now spending more money targeting Republicans whose policies they don't agree with than Democrats in TV ads, et cetera. That's quite remarkable.
Right. Clearly, outside groups are getting much more involved in this, and all you have to do is watch Fox or MSNBC, depending which side you're on.
Right.
All kinds of ads coming up, and this used to be something that was reserved for election years. Now it's right in the middle of legislative battles. We're good 13 months plus off from the next round of midterm elections.
David Mark is our guest for All Things Political. This is a show you always hear Mondays at 1 o'clock. He's editor-in-chief of Politics, which is a political journalism opinion site. It's a really interesting site because it allows the participant, the viewer, to vote on certain kinds of issues. They're not all heavy-duty politics, but many of them are, and it allows you to participate in expressing your opinions, which I think is an interesting idea. We have yet to talk about the House votes to give deep cuts to the food stamps program, which happened on Friday of this week. We'll get to that. And to you as well, what do you think about what's been going on in Kenya over the weekend? Do you think that we have not paid enough attention to radical terrorist groups? Do you find yourself unnerved by what has happened there? And what would you like the international response to be to that? The president's comments concerning last Monday's shooting, yet another occasion where he was very somber and sad and wondered if we've just reached a point in this country where we say, all right, well, that's what happens. And this imminent government shutdown, do you think it's going to happen? Would it make a difference? What do you think of the Republican members of the House and Senate, but started in the House, and not all Republicans, certainly, but a minority who have tied the continuation of the government and debt ceiling to Obamacare and whether or not it's funded. Here's our number. Join us. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter, at K Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to some phone calls. Diane in Milwaukee is our first caller for you. And Diane, hello.
Yes, I'd like to know how much the senators and representatives get for their food allowance. I don't care how it is, by year, by month, by meal. I'm sure it's a lot more than it is for a poor child in Milwaukee.
Do they get free food in their digs at, in Congress? Do you know? David?
No, they do not. I worked up in the Capitol building for a long time. The congressional salary is about $174,000 and change, maybe $174,900, something like that, close to $175,000. They do not get free food when they travel on overseas trips. That's generally paid for. But in their day-to-day lives, no, they don't get – they have to pay for lunch. I've stood in the congressional cafeterias many a time with members of Congress, although I will say those cafeterias are subsidized by taxpayers, and the food prices there are considerably cheaper than most of us would pay out of our pockets in a normal restaurant.
So it brings us to the conversation we have yet to have, and that's the House vote for deep cuts to food stamps. How deep were the cuts? Where does it go in the Senate?
The cuts, the proposed cuts that were voted for in the House on Friday were about $40 billion or so, close to that, over, I believe, a 10-year period. And this would make a big difference in the lives of a lot of people. That Democrats were quite angry about this. What they were particularly incensed about was not just the vote for the cuts themselves, but they weren't going to be automatic anymore. Traditionally, food stamps, if the federal food stamps program has been paid for as part of the Agriculture Department spending bill. That when you think agriculture, one would come up images of crops and even meat inspection, et cetera. But this, it, for a variety of reasons, over the years, it came to include food stamps as well. For the first time, House Republican leaders separated food stamps and made it its own bill. And that in itself has Democrats angry, let alone the cuts. I don't think this is going very far. The Senate Democrats are not too eager to take this up, and I suspect it won't actually be enacted into law. But it does set a precedent now of having a vote on this probably every year, whereas before it was kind of automatically part of a larger bill.
Diane, thanks for your call. We got Anthony in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
My comment basically is I don't think these elected officials really care about the public in general. I mean, they'll send us to war. They'll cut any funding for health care that could help people without health care. They'll cut food stamps for poor people. They don't really care. All they really care about is what they get. They get their free health care. They get their, you know, they end up millionaires after they serve their time in Congress. And the public gets no residual benefit from any of the work they've done in the last 20 years.
David.
The caller makes a good point in the broader point in that these members of Congress, when they leave office, even if they've been there for a short time, have amazing earning potential that they get by virtue of being in office. But a couple of specifics there. The members of Congress, they don't get free health care. They actually have to pay in a similar health care plan, similar to other federal workers, whether it's the Secretary of Agriculture or a postal clerk. So they have to pay for it out of their paychecks. What is different is they get instant automatic access to the best medical care in the Bethesda Naval Hospital. They also have an attending physician on site. I don't know too many people who have that at their offices. So in a sense, they do have superior health care than most Americans, but it is free.
To his broader point, and I wonder how many people would agree with his complete disgust with Congress, do many of us believe, we maybe won't go back 20 years, but the last few years we've just seen very little done for the American people, or is he off base?
It depends on one's point of view. If you, it sometimes blocking what you deem bad legislation is a positive step. I think what really is different, though, now is there simply aren't many moderates left. The parties have really sorted themselves out. There used to be a fairly strong contingent of moderate and even conservative Democrats and moderate even liberal Republicans, and I'm talking up till 10, 12 years ago. Now, though, through a variety of reasons, through redistricting, just the way people have sorted themselves out where they live, we're really looking at an electorate that is not at all together. People have separated, even segregated themselves, and there's just not much crossover between the parties anymore.
Thanks, Anthony. Tom in Rhinelander, hello.
Yes, hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to make a comment about this this relationship of outside sources, not only private political, but the media, and this false equivalency between Fox and MSNBC that so many commentators do. To me, you know, it's not even a close, not even close to compare.
Yeah, your phone is sounding pretty bad. Tom, can you call us back? We'll put you right through, but we just can't hear with all the static. So thank you. We'll let him finish his comments before we talk to him fully. Doug in Watertown, hi.
Hi. My concern is I was experienced on Wednesday last week. I went to the soccer stadium at Madison at the UW. And as I was buying my ticket, everybody came rushing out of the stadium. And I was surprised and asked what's going on. And they said they're shutting the stadium down because there's a shooter on the east side of campus over on Langdon Street. And it surprised the heck out of me. But as most people didn't expect the shooter to show up there, but as I was waiting, I was glad I didn't see people pulling out their AK-47s and their other concealed weapons and stuff like that. I thought people were still. And it made me feel that had I seen guns, it would have escalated and made it just that much more tense and possibly resulting in more people being killed than would have had, like it turned out, everybody just kind of looked around and was wondering, and eventually after an hour and a half, we went home. But having experienced a situation where there was a possible shooter, it just made me really leery of having other people with guns.
Well, it must have been very unnerving for you as well, Doug.
But
It must have been unnerving for you.
Well, it was very surprising. Yeah, kind of unnerving. I didn't, you know, being in Madison, I didn't think, you know, that that was kind of, but they did shut it down. I did see squad cars responding, and it did turn out it was a burglary, but and a shot was fired. But I could just imagine what would have happened had, and I'm concerned about the NRA and their pushing guns, and I think it makes people much more aggressive when they have a gun in their hand and they're going to use it, and who cares about what happens?
David.
Yeah, this is one of those conundrums. I sympathize with the caller. I probably would have felt the same way, and needless to say, thankfully it was a false alarm and nothing tragic came out of that. You talk to responsible gun owners, and I'm not talking fringe people, but those who have licenses, who train, they say that if you have somebody who knows how to handle a gun in that kind of situation, they actually could put down a shooter. Fortunately, I've not been in the middle of it. You get both sides. I think both sides have valid arguments on that.
It's just that the country has experienced so many of these that one of the reasons that happened, I'm sure, the complete shutdown is because of what happened on Monday in Washington, D.C., that we are living in a time when these are happening with so much regularity that Maybe if you were in a community where nothing had happened, it still makes you worry that there's a mass shooter on the loose somewhere. There's something really wrong with that. Yet a country shouldn't have to live that way.
I agree. I just, sadly, to use the cliche, I think it's the new normal. It's that any mass place is going to have to, a place where there are massive crowds, whether it's a university campus,
right,
sports stadium, et cetera, you've got to have an evacuation plan. And I know a lot of people in baseball stadiums, football arenas, et cetera, they're preparing for this. They actually have practice runs where they get like 20,000 people in there, then try to evacuate them. I just think it's something we have to be, it's not going away, and we're just going to have to live with it. And we sort of have to trust the authorities that when there are mass crowds gathering, that there is an evacuation plan of some sort.
Isn't that sad, David?
Oh, without a doubt. I say this as somebody who was there in the on 9/11 when the evacuation plan was literally run as quickly as you can by Capitol Police. Turned out to be sage advice. Fortunately, we all ended up okay. But I've been through it. I have an idea what something like that is like. Fortunately, not in a shooting. But you do need some order, and it's terrible that we have to think of it as a reality. But it's like a lot of things in life. It's just what we have to deal with.
Yeah. Was there a plan on that day? Did you know where you were supposed to go?
Oh, there was absolutely no plan. And this is in the early days of cell phones and before smartphones and instant texting, certainly Twitter, et cetera, had taken hold. And more scary, the authorities, like members of Congress, had little way to communicate with each other. And in fact, the only time I'd say I really, to be blunt, felt scared that day was standing out on the front in the Capitol when literally half of Congress there. And I was thinking to myself, if somebody ever wanted to decapitate a good chunk of the American government, this would be the time to do it. And that's when my colleagues and I started to get out of there as quickly as we could.
Mm. Our guest for All Things Political is David Mark. He's editor-in-chief of Politics. That's Politix. It's a political journalism opinion site, author of Going Dirty, The Art of Negative Campaigning. He worked for Politico. He's worked for the Associated Press, the Congressional Quarterly. And it's All Things Political this hour. We're talking about the news of the last few days, the horrors in Kenya, the president's response to the shootings last Monday in Washington, D.C., the House and food stamp cuts, and also this plan to tie the funding of Obamacare to battles over the federal budget and to raising the nation's debt ceiling, and other areas maybe that we haven't thought of that you would like to discuss, feel free to do so. Here is the number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk@wpr.org, Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter @KDunnShow. Guy in Grand Marsh, hi.
Good afternoon. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it just seems to me through the years here that the Republican Party is literally waging war against the middle class and the less fortunate. And I'm just wondering if you might give me a general idea of what might be driving this.
I'll take
my comment off the air.
But, Guy, don't go away yet. What makes you say that?
I don't know. It just seems like the Republicans are just to have something out for the less fortunate and the middle class, it seems. That's the way I seem to be interpreting the politics in the the Republican Party these days.
David?
Not surprisingly, and conservatives would have a starkly different point of view. They would say that cutting taxes is the way to economic prosperity. It puts more money back in people's pockets. The point of the caller, though, I will say, is being echoed by a majority of people. It's no coincidence that President Obama won re-election for a second time, or won a second term with more than 50% of the vote, the first president since Reagan to do that, and Democrats still maintain a sizable majority in the Senate, and they're down in the House, but they did make some comebacks. So I think slowly but surely the country is coming around to the caller's point of view, but there's always going to be a dissident viewpoint, and one thing I try not to do in politics is look at people's motives. Like, I don't think one side or another is mean-spirited. I think they have dramatically different viewpoints on what's good for the country, but usually, unless proven otherwise, I try to give them the benefit of the doubt that they actually mean well for what they're trying to accomplish.
And yet we spent a lot of time last week talking about 5 years since the collapse of 5 years ago and surveys of the American public asking who do you think, which party has handled issues of concern, financial issues. Have they helped the middle class? Have they helped the poor? Have they helped the rich? And overwhelmingly, no matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat, people say the rich have been helped. The poor haven't been helped at all. The middle class are doing a little bit better than they were a couple of years ago. But the Democrats don't get very high marks either.
Right. One of the frustrations has been that those who seem to have brought on the financial crisis, or at least played a significant role in it, the big banks, never really were punished. There were no prosecutions.
Yeah.
That the problem is, or what they did was probably legal. Now, maybe it shouldn't have been legal, and the rules ought to be changed, and they have to an extent under the Dodd-Frank legislation, but it's you can't prosecute people. There's a long tradition and rules, federal rules against that. So it's just one of the situations where it's very hard to put hang this on anybody. And the problem is that the blame went around. There you had lending institutions that were ripping off homeowners, but you also had people taking out massive loans that they never should have been allowed to take. So I think there was plenty of blame to go around there. The problem is we all got caught up in it when you have a too big to fail type situation. It brings down everybody, whether they had anything to do with it or not, no matter how responsible they were with their own resources.
Kelly in Madison, hi.
Yeah, I was wondering, would we be better off with a different form of government, like instead of having just two houses of, or the House of Representatives and Congress, if we had like a parliamentary setup where we could accommodate more points of view and that type of thing politically?
Not necessarily. Both sides have their – both the parliamentary and the kind of unique Washington system, American system, have their attributes and their drawbacks. Parliamentary system, of course, makes it much easier to get anything done. The majority party can mostly just ram through its program. Our Constitution is written with a profound mistrust of government. It's supposed to be difficult to get anything through. I don't think we need a new system of government. I think we need to refine how Congress operates and the presidency to an extent. But I'd like to see the filibuster be abolished. And I would say that no matter who was in charge, Republicans or Democrats, I would change sort of how the seniority system works, where just the lawmakers who stick around the longest get the plum assignments. It's not always true. It used to be more like that, but it's still like that to a large degree. How many of us have a seniority system at our own jobs? It's usually what you can accomplish and what you're doing, no matter how long you've been. It's just how productive you're being. And there's a bunch of other internal changes I would like to make toward how Congress operates. But fundamentally, I think the founders were almost geniuses, and they came up with a pretty good system, and we just need to be faithful to it and tweak it a bit.
We're welcoming phone calls. It's All Things Political this hour, and we're looking at what's been in the news politically the last few days. I'm surprised nobody has responded to this huge story out of Kenya. Act of terrorism, Al-Shabaab, evidently responsible, having gathered people, terrorists from various countries in the world. It looks as though the hostage situation is winding down a bit, but this has been going on for 3 days. Red Cross saying 62 people have been killed. Do you think we've paid enough attention to this in the world? What do you think about this event? Also, we have yet to hear comments on this this desire on the part of some House Republicans to tie defunding of Obamacare to the federal budget and raise the nation's debt ceiling. Are you worried there will be a government shutdown? Those are two issues we haven't had calls on yet, so why don't we get some calls on that? Here's the number again, 800-486-8655. David Mark, Editor-in-Chief of Politics, with an X, is with us this hour. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All Things Political this hour, and let's go next to Tom in Cedarburg. Hello.
Hello, Kathy. Thank you so much for having this program. I wanted to say that I've noticed you're one of the last programs on WPR that allows this open political talk. I've noticed many of the other ones have either stopped it or toned it down quite a bit. I'd like to say that since 2010, since the Supreme Court decision, which has allowed huge amounts of money into politics, that is that's been a game changer. And now the billionaires have decided to take back what they consider to be theirs, you know, and really can control everything that they want to. And that means destroying organized labor, getting rid of the Democratic Party. And that's really a large reason why things are bad for the working people and are not going to get better unless laws are changed that stop that the unfettered money to coming in and really controlling senators and congressmen. And sadly, especially the Republicans, and I voted Republican most of my life. I used to be a strong right-winger. I used to listen to all the talk shows, you know, Rush Limbaugh and all that, and right now, I think they're part of a large scam that's on the U.S. population, especially the working people, to scam them, and especially on the birth control issue, or not birth control, the abortion issue. It makes good people vote against their economic interests.
All right, David.
Yeah, the abortion issue—that's one that Democrats clearly have a majority of support on, and I say that because you can tell because Republicans don't really talk about it much. The most major Republicans have not changed their position on it, but they just don't really bring it up, and they don't see it as, kind of a winning political issue anymore. So, and that's one place where I think Democrats have sort of won the long war, even if it doesn't seem that way sometimes.
Thank you, Tom, so much for your call, 800-486-8655. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this, but he has been in the news a lot the past few days, and that's the Pope, who's presenting kind of this different model, certainly for the Catholic Church, but also in terms of here's a public figure who seems to be rather humble. This is something new, isn't it?
It's really striking. He really has struck a chord with a lot of people, Catholics and non-Catholics.
Right.
I've been sort of amazed to hear even people who are kind of overtly hostile to organized religion have kind of come around to him and said, he's got some interesting ideas. And it's worth noting the Pope has not changed his position on abortion, birth control, et cetera. They are the church's position, but he just says, let's not put in the forefront, just like I was describing with Republicans nationally. And I think they could take some lessons for this. And I just think that attitude of inclusion is going to draw a lot of people back into the fold. I say this as a non-Catholic. I would never tell somebody else what to do with their faith or their religion. But it just seems like attitude plays a large role in a lot of different religions. And whether you can still feel like you can be a part of something larger, whether you agree with everything doctrinarily 100% down the line, or whether you can say, you know what, I agree with the overall views and goals of this faith or this organization, even if we have some differences over positions X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm. And maybe he becomes the voice. We were talking earlier about how the poor haven't fared very well in this country for quite some time. Maybe he becomes the voice of how we treat the poor. Maybe he becomes the conscience in a way.
Right, and this is something that the previous Pope John Paul II and Ratzinger, Benedict, after him, also stressed. They were talking about economic issues, what might be called liberal views on economic matters, but it always seemed to get overshadowed by birth control and abortion, contraception, those such issues. And I think, if anything, this is a savvy kind of political move on behalf of Pope Francis to focus the debate more on an area where he probably can find broad agreement.
Mm-hmm. Jay in Green Bay.
Am I on? Hello?
Yes, you are, Jay. Go right ahead.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I think I have a solution for the gun violence in America. And I know it's a long way off, but I think we need a Steve Jobs, Bill Gates type innovative thinking to come up with a solution. And I think if we could put a GPS-like device on every handgun, then the criminals wouldn't be carrying guns because everybody would know who's got the gun. You know, everybody with a smartphone would know, including law enforcement, would know who has the gun. Everybody that walks into your establishment, you know, you would know whether this person has a gun. So the mass shooter, you know, would be extremely limited. The gangbanger in Chicago, you know, he'd have a tough time toting around his gun. You follow what I'm saying?
I follow what you're saying. David, what do you think?
Yeah, we just had an opinion piece of that on politics that got a lot of pushback, shall we say. And there actually are proposals for this biometric testing where, as the caller suggests, you would have to put your fingerprint would have to match the gun for you to be able to fire or operate. It's an interesting idea because, in a way, it wouldn't infringe on the Second Amendment. You could still possess guns. You just might not be able to fire them. It'd be probably tested in courts. I think we're a long way off from making that legal. But I actually think there are gun control forces, those who favor gun control, that are on, you might say, on the right side of this, that actually are going to win out in the long run. It may not be in our lifetimes, but I do think decades down the line, it's going to become majority opinion.
Do you really? But not in our lifetimes.
Yeah, maybe call me an optimist. I don't see it anytime soon in the coming decades. But I do think gun owners are still kind of a minority of the population, and I'm probably going to get myself into trouble by saying this. But I think public opinion is shifting, but it's going to take a good long while. Mm-hmm.
I think all you have to do is say the word guns and you get yourself in trouble in this country.
Right,
no matter what side you're
on.
I know, I'm sure you are. Thanks, Jay. Chris in Oshkosh, hi.
Yeah, hi, Kathleen. Is that me?
That's you.
Yeah, hi. I guess I'm taking you back a few minutes in the conversation, but I started to see red when I heard you using the phrase Obamacare. We have allowed the Republicans and really the extreme wing of the Republican Party to not only dictate the conversation, but to change our use of the language onto their terms. Two very specific cases, the very generalized use of Obamacare to describe what is actually the Affordable Care Act. The other example is this very, very dismissive habit that the right-wingers have developed of referring to the Democrat Party. What has traditionally been referred to as the Democratic Party. It is meant to do nothing more than to diminutize and to disrespect, as is the term Obamacare. Now, sadly, the president himself has tried to sort of take the sting away by adopting it himself, but I fear that he's just dancing to their music. Comments?
I agree with you about the Democrat term. I think because the president has embraced this and uses it, that he's changed the word in some ways. He's not dismissive of it, and when he says it, it means something positive. So I think it's changed. It's easier to say than the Affordable Care Act. But what do you think, David?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. On Obamacare, I think it ceased to be a pejorative when the president himself adopted it. And I understand the caller's point that he's essentially giving in to the Republicans' use of language, but it is kind of easier to say. And if the president wants to use it, then, hey, I'm fine with it. On the Democrat, quote-unquote Democrat phrase, that's just childish. And to me, it makes me want to dismiss the argument of anybody who uses it, no matter what they're saying substantively, because it's just like calling a kid a name on the school ground. It's interesting, the etymology of it. Some people think that it's meant to suggest that the members of the Democratic Party aren't real small-D Democrats, or they want to get the word rat in there, quote-unquote. There's no precise definition of it, but for whatever reason, it's sort of taken on a really negative, nasty connotation.
Right.
And I just think it's silly and juvenile.
Yeah. Anything else, Chris? Chris is gone. Thank you very much for your call. Let's go to Jim in Janesville. Hello.
Good afternoon. I was curious about your opinion on the upcoming legislation or possible legislation with the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Do you have any more specifics on that? Do you mean a trade deal with one of our Asian partners, or is there something else you're referring to?
The Trans-Pacific Partnership, it's just 11 countries involving the United States, New Zealand, Vietnam.
Gotcha.
Locked out of the negotiations, but there's over 600 corporate members that are making up this new agreement that's supposedly on fast-track authorization.
We should do a show on that as well as look at the history of other trade agreements. There hasn't been a lot of press on this, has there, David?
There really hasn't. And caller brings up a point that one of the criticisms that often get made about trade agreements, whether it's with parts of Asia or Central America or Canada and Mexico, et cetera, that they're negotiated by elites, by corporations, business leaders, that sort of thing, and that they give short shaft to labor rights and other people who should be taken into consideration. I will admit I have to study up on the specifics of the one you're mentioning. It is part of kind of the administration's broader strategic shift to the Asia-Pacific region, kind of away from Europe, even though the administration wouldn't say it that way. Clearly, it's meant to kind of rein in China and encircle China economically. But I think this is a topic, like you say, that's worthy of a discussion of its mm-hmm. own.
Thanks for calling, Jim. We'll follow through on that. We're on the case. Charlie in Madison, hello.
Yeah, Kathleen, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
One of the issues of concern has been touched on in your conversation is the growing income inequality.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I might mention, just by way of an illustration, something that I found rather shocking. In last year, David Koch and his brother both made about $6 billion, which would be about equivalent to about a 12-foot-high stack of $100 bills every hour, compared with the annual salary of and the practice doc, which is about 150,000. So that amounts to about 7.5 inches for a year versus 12 feet of $100 bills for an hour. And it just seems like the inequality is growing. There might be some interest. Madison Institute is having a forum on the 27th at Mortgage Auditorium in Granger Hall at 7:30 on meltdown, unemployment, poverty, and America's race to the bottom. And I think this is something that is and should be getting more attention because a lot of people are feeling left out.
Thank you very much. Conference this Friday. Send us more information. We'll put it on our Facebook page. We'd be happy to do this. It is. Every time we do a show on an issue like this, and I guess that survey last week showed the same thing, that Americans are most concerned about jobs in this country. They are concerned that the issue has not been addressed. They're not making enough money to feel like they're ahead of the game. Their salaries haven't kept up with inflation. It remains, I think, a thorny and probably unrecognized and undealt with problem in this country, David.
I agree. I mean, there's multiple causes of it, and that's one of the real legacies, not a positive one, of the Great Recession that we lived through in 2008, 2009, is a lot of companies simply have learned to make do with less. But also a lot of jobs have been switched to robotics. 60 Minutes had a big piece about that, not to mention jobs going elsewhere, textile manufacturers, et cetera, going overseas. A lot of jobs, just American jobs, are superfluous right now, and that's a big problem. I don't have a simple solution to it. It's a deep, complicated problem, but I agree. I think some candidate who could really tap into that, presidential candidate, could go a long way.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Thank you, Charlie, for the call. And Mike in Milwaukee, about a minute left. Hi, Mike.
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to expand on your guests. Comments regarding the mortgage meltdown. It's kind of folksy, and it sounds right about owners taking on too much debt, and the banks were giving out too much debt. But what really caused the meltdown was the fraudulent use of underwriting on these loans, and also they were bundling these bad loans and labeling them as AAA secure to the world. That's what caused the meltdown. So, sure, there's plenty of fraud and criminality involved in this, but where's the political will?
Who's gone to jail for any of it? That's a question a lot of whoever went to jail. Thanks, Mike, very much for the call. David, thank you. People can get to your site, which is really interesting. Congratulations on it. I love the interactive nature of it.
And thank you.
Yeah, you go. How do you get there? Politics?
It's politics.topics.com, both with an X, politix.topix.com.
All right. Great, David. Join us again, please. Thank you.
Anytime. Thank you.
David Mark, editor-in-chief of Politics. He's also worked for Politico and Congressional Quarterly and the Associated Press. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley, who produced this program. Thanks for all of your calls. We got through a lot of them today, and that's always good. We have news coming up momentarily, and we'll return with another hour of Monday Conversation here on the Ideas Network.